Unfortunately, we are all too familiar with good people who we've put in that category doing bad things. And the more we put people in rigid categories, the more scandalized and the more impacted we are when they break that mold or that break out of that box we put them in. Good people can do horrible things. But what about bad people, as we've characterized or labeled them, doing good things? Is that even possible? And if they do, what does that mean? Jesus himself says in the scriptures, good trees bear good fruit and bad trees bear bad fruit. You will know them by their fruit. But too often, in our rigid view of characterizing or judging people, we put people in certain boxes, and when the complexities of the human condition and the reality this side of heaven shatters those preconceived notions, we're devastated. Many people, quote, leave the faith because they never had a relationship with Jesus to begin with, just a structure to see the world. And when it breaks, their quote unquote faith or their church, quote unquote, has failed them, and they walk away because there's no relationship there. But what happens when bad people, as we see them to be, do good things and challenge us who presume ourselves to be, quote unquote, good? What do I mean by that? Well, the parable that Jesus gives us today was extremely upsetting to his listeners. Who was the Samaritan? So the history here is really important to understand the context. The kingdom of Israel had conquered all their enemies, remained in peace, but the people started breaking God's commands, beginning with its own leaders and kings. And as a consequence, the Babylonians came, invaded Israel, and conquered them. They had two choices: convert to the pagan faith or die, or if you're lucky, we'll take you in as slaves to Babylon. So many Israelites chose death or slavery over denying their faith. But there were some who were all too happy to worship whatever god they could and keep their land, keep their freedom, their lives, and take advantage of the neighbor who died for the faith's land and use that for their well-being as well. And so those who were not killed were taken into Babylon. The rest, who integrated their faith or mixed it with the Babylonian pagan religion, remained happily on their land and also cultivating the land of their neighbor and taking advantage of their absence. But eventually, the king of Persia, Cyrus, conquers the Babylonians, under which Israel is, as well as the Israeli slaves. And King Cyrus of Persia, upon conquering the Babylonians and being in charge of all those under them, makes this decree: let the Israelites go up to Jerusalem, let them return to their land and worship God as they know him. The Israelites couldn't believe it. They had been slaves for centuries. And now this pagan king tells them, go back to your homeland and don't worship our gods, worship yours. Build the temple how you want. They were so ecstatic, they called him the second Moses. And so the Israelites returned to the promised land, the temple in ruins, but not a penny to their name, now having to rebuild the temple. But when they get there, there are the Samaritans, the Jews who mixed their religion with paganism, who denied their faith and betrayed their people and their loyalty to God so as to remain free, alive, and fruitful in the land that was theirs and others they took. And the Samaritans, thinking themselves being generous, offered to these just released slaves their own money to help build the temple. The Israelites resented, hated them for what they had done. They've come from centuries of slavery, and these folks are wealthier than ever on the lands of others who were killed for the faith or taken into slavery. They refused a penny. And so the Samaritans had to build their own temple in the south, while the Israelites slowly but surely rebuilt the Temple of Solomon in their own land. Wanting nothing to do with the Samaritans thereafter, when an Israelite had to travel south, they went around the land of Samaria rather than pass through it. They were unclean. They were half-breeds, half-Jewish, half-pagan. They were betrayers of the faith, and they were hated. Jesus uses this example very intentionally to poke the bear, if you will, poking the presumption of perfection and holiness of the priests and Levites, scholars of the law, and those who consider themselves the holiest of all. And so he uses this parable. The priest passes by, sees the man, doesn't know if he's dead or not, and refuses to touch him. Because if he touches him and he's dead, he's now unclean. He cannot enter the temple to worship, except after a very extensive purification process. The Levite fears the same thing and prefers cultic ritual purity over compassion and helping those in need. And he passes by. But the Samaritan, out of the goodness of his heart, the bad guy, who you would expect less of than the priest, the Levite, does what should have been done by the other two and shows this stranger incredible compassion and generosity. Jesus is poking the bear of those of us who presume ourselves so holy that we're incapable of omitting the good. You know, when we go to confession, we not only confess the wrong things we have done, the bad things we've done actively, but we also confess the good things that we must do that we don't. Whether that's coming to Mass on Sunday or Holy Days of Obligation, doing our chores that our parents give us, our homework, obeying our parents, taking care of our spouse, our children, teaching the faith to our children. And we don't do those things that are a fundamental obligation. Those are things we should also confess. Sins of omission, as we call them traditionally. Jesus in today's gospel shows us that, quote unquote, people we consider bad can be capable of greater good than those of us who put cultic worship purity above all else. Yes, we're here at Mass on Sundays, but how do we treat our neighbor? It's good that we're here. It's necessary that we're here. We're fulfilling the first and third commandment. But what do we do when it's not Sunday? What do we do even just for our own church community and our neighbors at large? Do we do anything at all? Do we recognize their need and reach out a hand to help them? Or is our worship empty? That's what Christ was highlighting. The worship of the Levites and the scholar of the law was an empty, hollow worship. He called them, quote, whitewashed tombs filled with dead bones. You brood of vipers, you hypocrites. Because he saw that their worship was perfect, but their hearts were far from love of God and love of neighbor. Because the two are inseparable. You cannot love one without the other. And if we love God rightly, it shows by how we treat even our enemies. And so Catholics are rightly scandalized when good people do bad things. But what happens when a Muslim, a Jewish person, a Protestant, a Buddhist, an atheist, or someone totally contrary to our faith does something good? Can we recognize it and be inspired by their example to do the same out of love for Christ? This scholar of the law was so resentful of the Samaritan people when Jesus asked him, which of the three, in your opinion, was neighbor to the robber's victim, he refused to even say the word Samaritan. He said, the one who treated him with mercy. He didn't want to connect the one who treated him with mercy with this half-breed hypocrite, as they considered them to be. But it was. This half-breed hypocrite did what was right, and the others did not. Christ reminding him to then go and do likewise. Keeping God's commands in doing likewise, love of God, the first three commandments, and love of neighbor, the last seven commandments, is not something that requires extraordinary revelation or a degree in theology. It's the Ten Commandments that can be known by the natural law. That's what Moses is saying in today's first reading. The laws written in the book of God are known by reason alone. You don't have to be a religious person to understand through reason alone and the natural law that it is wrong to kill. It is wrong to steal. If there is a God, we should have no other, and we should worship him as he tells us. These things are, maybe we'd use today, common sense, but traditionally are understood as a natural law. That's why the commandments are often shared by people of many different religions. They agree upon the same thing, though in how they apply it, there is some difference. Because ultimately, what we must do is simple and obvious to understand, not as easy to do. And so, as we experience the Lord loving us when we don't deserve it, forgiving us when we ask of him, even though we don't deserve it, and caring for us in our need, the good and bad alike, we are reminded once again that, as Jesus said, "So as I have done for you, so you must do for one another." So it is right and good that we are here. But is our worship empty, or is it from the heart? We know not by judging others, but by looking at our own actions. Do I do the good I must? Do I avoid the evil I should? And do I help my neighbor, the person who is in need? Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise."